I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down. As the flames grew higher.
Give me some burns, Blondie, Wallace. Give me some Blondie.
Blondie, you want some Blondie?
I want some Blondie.
Rapture. I'm still singing.
Wish I'd never
I'm
asked.
Still singing after the weekend, being up in Cairns and the PA, the music playing during stoppages in play. It was a great... I don't know who the DJ was, but I want to get him to my next birthday party because I thought he was fantastic. I was having a great time.
It's funny you mention it. I could hear the music coming across. I was chuckling, no sooner had I heard Johnny Cash than you referred to Johnny Cash and Blondie. But you know what was? It was a theme of the weekend. I'm sure there were other games this weekend where I heard the music more than I can remember hearing it before. Is it a deliberate push?
Yeah. It's entertainment. Sport is these days is entertainment. And it comes from America, where we take everything and bring it over here. And it's been, you know, part of the NBA for a long time, quite obviously. The NBL out here does it. The NHL, the ice hockey, they do a fantastic job of the entertainment package. It's an indoor stadium to begin with, so it sort of lends itself to the full entertainment package. And we have taken those ideas, and I guess from the NFL as well, maybe not so much the NFL, but the NBA and the NHL in particular, and what they do now, it was during Origin, Sunday week ago. Every time there was a stoppage in play at ANZ Stadium between New South Wales and Queensland, not that you would think Origin needs musical accompaniment,
no,
but every time there was a stoppage, they were out there playing the tunes, whatever it might be, or having something, you know, the announcer was talking about something, spruiking something, whatever it is. So, you know, the game being the only source of entertainment these days when you go to a game or watch it on TV, those days are long gone.
Look, when there's a try or some big event, I think the music adds to it. But when there's just a random scrum around halfway and you start hearing Blondie and Johnny Cash get blared over the PA, it does take you back. I don't know whether I'm a fan of it just used holus bolus, but certainly injected at the right time. I like it. What about you?
Well, yesterday, you see, there was only 7,000 in Cairns, and I say only, but, you know, it was a rainy day. The rain continued throughout the game for the vast majority of it. And it's a very open field, you know, it's not a stadium in any sense in reality. So yeah, the sound just carried across what was the quiet expanses of Barlow Park in Cairns. It became, you know, a real part of what we were watching, I guess, at home on TV as well, because it was so obvious. Like, I don't mind it. I guess it's a little more obvious at times, and that sort of changes maybe your perspective on things. But you know, we talk about trying to get people to go to the game, and it's a family atmosphere, and getting more women and children at games. And if it lends itself to being a bit more open to having more families come along, and it's easy to entertain the kids, whether it's through mascots or whatever it might be, then sure, I'm okay with it. Yeah. I don't think it's going to turn anybody off, do you?
And it certainly didn't put Adam Reynolds off, did
no.
it? With that the winning field goal is South Sydney won again. They keep the pressure on St George, Illawarra. They just keep doing it, the Bunnies.
They are in tremendous form. I mean, 8 in a row now. And I thought at different stages yesterday they're going to lose that game. They were down early. They were down again in the second half. They kept finding a way to fight back. And as long as they stay injury-free, they're a massive chance, aren't they, to fight it out for the premiership, whether it's against the Dragons, the Storm, the Roosters, the Panthers, whoever it might be, that finds the Sharks, whoever finds themselves when the whips are cracking in the last couple of weeks of the competition, the Bunnies have a real chance. And you get the idea now, the sense that they realise they've got a real chance to do what they did in 2014.
Well, answer this question for me. What's the single most significant reason South Sydney have improved this year in comparison with last year? Give me one player or one aspect of their play that has led them to where they are now?
Well, obviously the one that hits you squarely between the eyes is the fact that Greg Inglis is there. He wasn't there at all last year after that knee injury against the Tigers and the opening minutes of what was the season. But it's more than obviously just Greg Inglis coming back and being fit and playing good football. You know, the Burgess trio, Sam is... If I was Sam Burgess, I would be campaigning the NRL to reduce interchange to as few interchanges as possible. I'd be saying, look, let's make it 2 only, because his value, the fewer interchanges you have in the game, Sam Burgess's value just skyrockets, because he is a workaholic with the ball, without the ball, and off the back of playing 80 minutes in the heat in Denver for the English side against the Kiwis last week in that test match, coming back. Now, he had a full week of prep, as everybody else did, for the vast majority of players. Obviously, Gareth Widdop, James Graham didn't, because they played on Thursday night down there for the Dragons in Wollongong against the Eels. But even still, what Sam Burgess does every week, as long as he stays on his feet and can avoid those suspensions we were talking about on the shows earlier this season when he got those almost back-to-back suspensions, if he stays on his feet and plays the sort of football he's playing at the moment, then he is, for my way of thinking, the prime reason why they are potentially premiership favourites.
Yeah, I would say the single most relevant factor in my mind is his two brothers, Tom and George, who have improved their handling, who are running fantastically, and it's from them that Damien Cook can run out of dummy half. The back line has the latitude to show the skill that you refer to. I would go to the two props who have improved back to their premiership winning form. And, you know, as we've mentioned, it is great to watch South Sydney when they're playing on the front foot like that, when they're winning games that perhaps they shouldn't have yesterday. I go back to those two front rowers. But good luck to them. It's going to be a great finals campaign with South Sydney prominent.
And they weren't as good on the left-hand side yesterday, given the conditions. I'm sure that played a part of it. It was greasy and at times hard to handle. So it wasn't as easy to get to the left edge as they have done throughout the season so far, but their numbers on that left-hand side, I mean, their left-hand side attack has scored more tries just on that left edge than the Bulldogs and the Tigers had in their entirety. The total team tries for both those two teams was less than the Rabbitohs' left edge attack going into round 16. So I think that just in itself, I know the Bulldogs' attack and the Tigers' attack hasn't been much to write home about in 2018, quite obviously, but they've got so many points in them when they're all injury-free, and that might be a problem with Greg Inglis picking up that thumb injury. He won't be playing for Queensland in Origin 3, as we now know. You're sort of hoping for the Rabbitohs' sake. You want to see all the stars on deck, no matter what team they play for. You're hoping for their sake that it's only a couple of weeks or a couple of games maybe that he misses for the Rabbitohs, and they continue on to show the style of football they've produced so far.
While you were getting wet in Cairns, I was soaking up the sunshine at Leichhardt Oval. You know, you drive in. It was an afternoon for rugby league romantics. Terrible traffic, absolutely diabolical traffic to get to the ground. Then you drive past the hot dog stand. Then you walk the rest of Mary Street. You see the ground filling up well during the Intra-Super Premiership game, so it's near full by the completion of that. You look over the Wayne Pearce Hill, the Keith Barnes stand, the Latcham Robinson stand. The picture was perfect. The scene was set. The script was going to be Robbie returns, scores a try. It goes from sitting on the scoreboard to putting his name on the scoreboard, and the Tigers win, right? Well,
sure.
Gold Coast said no to that. It was 12-all at halftime, 12-all for much of the second half, and the Tigers literally threw it away. Rather than holding that last pass and backing themselves to score later in the set, they just turned possession over. And well done to the Gold Coast Titans, who, with a young, inexperienced side, get another win for Garth Brennan. That's back-to-back wins at suburban grounds, Belmore and now Leichhardt, where the opposition was expected to be too good for them. So well done, Garth Brennan. And young Ash Taylor, by a long stretch, not dynamic, but he did what he had to do. He scored a try, kicked pretty well, almost came up with a 40-20. AJ Brimson is a nice foil, incidentally, at the moment. Young, only 19 years of age.
Yep.
But don't underestimate what AJ Brimson is doing. And there's a 6 and 7 combination that if they stay fit and continue on the trajectory they are on, tough word to say, then that can be the halves combination for the Titans for a while to come. And who knows when Ash Taylor knocks on the Origin door enough to get a call-up. It won't be in this series, despite the fact Brett Camorley yesterday said, and he's an Origin halfback, you got to pick Ash Taylor for Game 3. Well, Kevy didn't listen.
Well, and part of the reason maybe he hasn't put those JT Jonathan Thurston posters up on his mirror, as we were saying on the show last week, because he needs to work on his fitness. I'll keep hammering that point. He's not, in my mind, Origin ready. I know Queensland and the table certainly have reversed, haven't they? You know, they're now looking for halves as New South Wales have looked for halves for the past decade. New South Wales suddenly has Cleary and Maloney as their bedrock, their rock-solid halves combination. Ben Hunt isn't the answer in Maroon. I guess they've established that now. He's going to play off the bench at this point, barring what happens in in the camp going into the game. But yeah, Ash Taylor for mine still isn't there. He can be brilliant and he can be very good. And I think, you know, if he really works at his fitness and his game, he can be the long-term seven for Queensland. But I don't think he's there yet.
And just to indicate how close Ash Taylor was, my mail is that Kevvy Walters rang several people at the Gold Coast Titans and said, I'm thinking about it. What's your input? And after assessing all the input, he said, I'll put that decision on hold for at least another 12 months. Back page of the Courier Mail, we were lauding the fact they went with wishing a Ponga star previously. Well, today, there's a picture of Daly Cherry Evans in that red emergency box covered in glass in case of emergency break. And the headline says, it's time. So a sort of a backhanded compliment, I suppose, to Daly Cherry Evans from the Courier Mail.
I worked with Kevvy Walters on Friday night in Adelaide and then on Saturday night in Brisbane. And we were watching, when you're prepping, getting ready for a game, you're just keeping an eye on what's happening. So it was Newcastle and the Bulldogs. You were there. But you've got stuff to do. You've got sound checks to do. You've got things to prepare, a few last minute notes or whatever, going through some and team changes. You've got things to record for replays. So there's a host of things you have to do, which mean that you can't keep your attention solely on the game that's playing before you. And I saw Kalyn Ponga get backslammed by Josh Jackson off that kick very
great
early
tackle
in the game and slammed into the turf in a legal but really hard tackle.
Yeah.
And went, wow, that would really shake you up. And then whatever minutes, time after that, I see Kalyn Ponga walking off the field with the trainer and Corey Parker sitting next to me said, Ponga's just done his hamstring. And I said, no, I think he's probably just going off because he got rattled up with that shot. He's got a rib or something or whatever it might be. And he said, no, he's just tweaked his hamstring. And Kevvy said, literally, you're joking, aren't you? And Kevvy went white. And he said, mate, I'm telling you, he's just done his hamstring. That's why he's going up the tunnel now. And Kevvy was so quiet and immediately went to his phone, maybe sending off a text to somebody to say, is that right that Ponga's done his hamstring? He couldn't believe it. And I felt so sorry for him, having lost his first series as a coach, down to dead rubber coming up at home, admittedly, but he desperately wants to win game three. He doesn't want to get swept, given everything that's happened with Queensland over the past 12, 13 now seasons of Origin. The mood and the dynamic in the Fox Sports commentary box at Suncorp on Saturday night changed like that when Ponga left the field in Newcastle.
Well, I'll come back to Ponga and a dramatic evening in Newcastle, but let's talk Origin for a moment. So no Ponga, no Greg Inglis, and they're trying to avoid a 3-0 sweep Queensland. You've just given a great insight into life of a coach, a representative coach, Kevvy Walters, doing it tough. Brad Fittler names his 17, and surprising me, does make a change, going with Tarek Sims, who I have absolutely no problem with being picked. I think he's been fantastic. But having named Matt Pryor for game two and having won the series in game two, from my recollection, Matt Pryor was anything but diabolical. Why doesn't Matt Pryor retain his position was? To me, that I can't explain that.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of people asking the same question. But I'm going to say from a team dynamic, they love Tarek Sims and what he's done in and around the camp, despite the fact he hasn't played the first
game. Why didn't they pick him for game two then?
Well, because they wanted a big man and they wanted a middle forward as opposed to an edge forward, which Sims is. So they're going to rework things with Clemmer and Vaughan starting the game as opposed to Matt Pryor in game two as it was. But I think it's, the message I think from Freddie in particular and also Brandy and Danny Badiris is that the team is bigger than the individual and it doesn't matter what you've done or what the status of the series is. We have enough good players here and enough depth, especially in the forward pack, that we can make changes as we see fit that will benefit the team as we see going into this game. It's not about just because you're part of a winning team and have done the job in game two doesn't mean you automatically get selected for game three. If we see things changing, the dynamic of the series changing perhaps, it'd be different if it was 1-1 and everything was on the line going to Queensland. But the fact that they've got the series wrapped up, I think it's a bit of a reward for Tarek Sims to say, we love what you've done. You've been great around the camp. We want you to get a game and we think you can really bring something in this way. And I know when they've named the team today, our time, Monday morning, Jack DeBellin is still named at lock forward in the 13 jumper. And Jake Trbojevic is in 15 coming off the bench. I wouldn't be at all surprised. In fact, I'm pretty confident that Jake Trbojevic will start the game and play the full 80 minutes and Jack DeBellin will come off the bench because they can't praise highly enough Jake Trbojevic and what he's done for the first couple of games. He's an 80-minute player. He just needs to play 80 minutes. What he brought to the team, both with the ball and without the ball in the first two games, they're just glowing in their praise as far as the New South Wales coaching staff is concerned about Jake Trbojevic. They want him. They say he just needs to be an 80-minute Origin player, and he will be, and I think you'll see that swap before game three.
Oh, I'm convinced that New South Wales will win and will make it a sweep to the Blues when you look at how steady they've been and how many injuries to significant players Queensland have copped. I'm sick of the argument that I've heard on radio and on social media, why do we even play it? Well, we've got to play it. And some of the best Origin games have been dead rubber. So that's an irrelevant discussion. We're not going to have that.
There's one very good reason why we do play it.
Yeah, it's called television.
It's called $2 billion rights
deals. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And trust me, the Nine Network is not paying big dollars to broadcast the NRL and Origin each year and then say, don't worry about game three.
Exactly. So let's not even have that discussion. But a point I keep coming back to year after year, why wasn't the Shield presented to the Blues in front of the ANZ faithful for game two? If the Blues are beaten in game three, you'll have all the Maroons there lauding their team's achievement. And Boyd Cordner, as long as his calf is okay, will have to go up and accept the Shield. It is wrong. And I don't know. I'm yet to hear a reason why we can't do it the way it should be done. Take the trophy to the ground for game two and ask the winning team, do you want it now? Yes, we would.
Of course. And the only reason they don't do it is because they're trying to sell tickets to a dead rubber in game three. And they think the imagery, this is 100% what it is, the imagery of giving the Shield to the winning team at the end of game two signals in people's minds that the series is done and dusted. That's it. It's over. And they think that will affect ticket sales for game three.
Well, do they take us for morons? Because we love the third game. We love the chance that one team is going to make a clean sweep of it, perhaps, or the other team could fight back. I don't understand that. I don't understand that rationale.
It drives me wild, you, every year when it happens.
They are taking us for idiots if they think that us watching the trophy get presented is going to stop us buying into game three.
I know. And what happens?
We all know it's 2-0.
In game three, and it's happened in the past, the losing, so you win the series 2-0, you go to the opposition's ground in game three, you lose the game, but you've won the series. So having just lost, you get presented with the trophy, the Shield, with Bert and Wally on the front of it, with all the victories over the years around the outside of the Shield. There it is, Origin history. Yeah. You've just lost the game. You get given the Shield in front of an empty stadium with 500 Queenslanders or New South Welshmen, whatever the case may be, depending on where it is. Looking at you going, that's great.
Yeah.
Nick off.
I know it's probably to-do item 685 on Todd Greenberg's list, but I'd like to see it get done. And Bert, not Bert Newton, Brett Kenny, of course, opposite Wally Lewis on the Origin Shield. Although Bert did have his moment in the sun this week, didn't he?
I'm glad you bring that up because for years that has really just grated on me, the fact that you don't get the Shield when you win the series.
No,
and then that scene, you know, and I think New South Wales will win game three because Queensland are suddenly battling with so many injuries.
Yeah.
But conversely, I think it's great that Billy Slater gets to be an Origin captain in his final game of Origin football up there in front of the home fans, which should ensure a sellout, surely, shouldn't it? That there's enough, you know, if that Queensland pride will kick in and they'll sell out Suncorp Stadium to see Billy in his final game.
Surely. That Billy Slater playing his final game, if it was an 80,000 seat venue, they would get 80,000 there, I would have thought. It is Queensland. It is Origin.
That's right.
It is close to Caxton Street. It will be a full house. But, Waz, if I can jump back to the game that led us into the Origin discussion. Newcastle, so Kalyn Ponga gets injured. It was a night of bedlam. I was sideline, and rarely have I seen less of a game that I was sideline at than Saturday night, because when Kalyn Ponga comes off, obviously the story is hamstring. Does he play Origin? And you're chasing the injury updates and trying to get the latest, even inquiring as to whether Kalyn would like to speak on camera during the game to let people know what he thinks. And then horribly Slade Griffin does his knee for a fourth time. He's going to have knee reconstructive surgery. So the doctor is off to hospital with Slade. The rest of the staff are worried about Slade, checking up on Kalen. We had technical difficulties during the broadcast. It was diabolical. Sideline. I've almost got to look at the scoreboard here to realise that Canterbury actually won the game against Newcastle, 36-16. When you lose your one and your nine, it's a fair excuse, but Newcastle weren't using it as an excuse. It was a poor performance by them, but that was a tough night on the sideline on Saturday.
Yeah, sometimes it goes smoothly and everything clicks and you don't even think about it. You just have to do your job and that's it. And you go back to the hotel or whatever else or home and, go, that was as it should be. But there's other times when, maybe at home it seems okay, but behind the scenes it's string, sticky tape, paddle pop sticks,
a bit like that,
whatever it is to keep the thing going.
And I will say was that the Newcastle club was fantastic because I was overstepping the mark, continually bothering individuals, saying, listen, we really would love to get Kalen Ponga. I know it's not normally the done thing, but he's not too badly injured. He can speak, and wouldn't he love to have his say? And then alternatively, yes, we know it's a hamstring, but is it grade one or grade two? Do you have any idea on that front? Could we ask him? And I was overstepping the boundaries a little, and they handled it really, really well. I said that. I realise I'm not normally in this realm, but given the player, given the storyline, let's see if we can bend those rules. And they were quite happy to consider it and did so very politely, but stood their ground. I'd give the Knights a fair rap.
And the reality is, in those situations, if it's a hamstring, we know the story by now. Scans tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
We'll find out the severity of it. It was obviously severe enough, and it's, any sort of, it's 11 days between Saturday night when that game was played and Origin 3. Any sort of hamstring tweak was going to be enough to rule him out. So it was pretty apparent that he wasn't going to be available for Origin 3, and that was confirmed. He'll miss, upwards of a month, maybe even a slightly more, depending on his rehab and how it goes. So
they get Mitchell Pearce back shortly. But and I'm
he'll play their next game.
Yeah, he will. And I'm a little uncomfortable that, Kalen Ponga's relatively minor hamstring injury becomes the storyline and the big headline because Slade Griffin did his right knee originally, then his left knee twice, and he's done his left knee badly for a third time, straight after making his Kiwi debut in Denver. And you speak to anyone at the Melbourne Storm Club where Slade spent a long period of time and actually more than 1,000 days out of the game. And even though he's left the club now, they speak so highly of him because they know what a quality bloke he is, how hard he's worked. And I watched a game actually with some of the Melbourne Storm staff in New Zealand when Slade was playing. And they were cheering for him. They were quite outward in their praise and adoration of Slade Griffin. So to see Slade go down again like that, it can be a cruel and brutal game, and if any player deserves better, it's Slade Griffin. It was really sad to see, and it was sad to see that, perhaps it was Kalen's hamstring injury that got all the talk when really there's a far more serious story at play here.
And the severity of it means he will likely miss, 12 months of football. He may not be back until this point, next year. It might be the middle of the season or slightly beyond the middle of the season when he actually gets back on the paddock, depending on how it goes, because the ACL that he tore on Saturday night was already a grafted ACL. It wasn't his ACL that had been repaired, but it was a completely new one that had been, placed in his knee in one of those previous reconstructions. Yeah. So
I was thinking, is he going to play again? This fourth knee, midway through the season, could this be the end for Slade Griffin? But I hope that if he needs someone to talk to, that Brent Tate might be a man who, seemingly was done a number of times, but kept persisting, kept coming back and finished on his terms. I hope Slade Griffin does the same.
Yeah, that was dramatic scenes up there, quite obviously, on Saturday night in Newcastle. I want to go back to Friday night because I was in Adelaide at the terrific Adelaide Oval, which, having been there a couple of times now since the redevelopment and in a former life, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and jobs we've done and stuff, I had worked at Adelaide Oval.
What were you flogging down there, was?
No,
women's underwear?
It wasn't women's underwear or brass. No, right. I was working for 2UE on the cricket coverage.
Okay, right. Okay, and, you were selling something.
The first season was the 92-93 summer where the Windies came out and the Windies won by one run at the Adelaide Oval when Craig McDermott got caught down the leg side off a glove.
Yeah, wasn't?
No, he hit it.
He hit it.
But it was a great test match and then they smashed us in Perth on the fast Wacker deck. So I've had a history with Adelaide over a number of years and events over there. The redevelopment of Adelaide Oval is stunning. Mm. I think it's the best stadium in Australia. Now, the MCG is quite obvious. A brilliant building with the feet, 100,000 people, so close to the action as such. I mean, if you're in the back row, you're a long way from the ground, but it's 100,000 people. It is phenomenal, the MCG, and through the bowels of it, and the MCC, the cricketers club there, and the museum they've got is fantastic. There's a smaller museum in the bowels of the Adelaide Oval, but it is also tremendous, the history of South Australian cricket and Test match cricket at that particular venue. But everything bar basically the dressing rooms, the Aussie dressing room and the visitors dressing room for the cricket, that's pretty much the only remaining part of what used to be the old Adelaide Oval. But everything they've done just fits in seamlessly. You've still got the hill there. You've still got the old scoreboard. I think that will be there forever. It should be heritage listed. If it isn't, I'm sure it is. It just works, and it would be tremendous to see 40,000 there watching an NRL game. I'm sure it's great if there's a full house.
We'll see Origin there in future, so you might see your full house.
Yeah, well, that's right. And when the AFL games are being played there and there's a big crowd, it must be fantastic. Or day one of a test match, Australia versus England in the cricket, that would also be a tremendous atmosphere at Adelaide. It's brilliant. And I just hope that whatever happens here in Sydney, where we're based, or you're in Wollongong, but we've got Parramatta Stadium, it's probably half built at the moment. I flew over it again in the weekend on the way to Adelaide. I just hope it won't be an Adelaide Oval, but I hope it's a stadium befitting a new stadium being built in Sydney in 2018 and is a brilliant place to go and watch sport at. And whatever happens with ANZ Stadium, the redevelopment there, and Allianz quite obviously, I just hope they have looked at the other stadiums around the country. The new one in Perth, Adelaide, MCG, even Amy Park is a great, smaller rectangular venue to watch rugby league or soccer at.
You ranked Adelaide number one.
It's the best for mine.
How does that compare with Optus Stadium in Perth? I've not been there yet. You have?
They're different stadiums because, Optus is brand spanking new and has all the technology as far as the lights and the facilities, again, in and around it all with the food, the hirers suites and stuff. And I was lucky to get a bit of a tour through. If you're a gold class member or whatever the category is at Optus Stadium in Perth, you are doing very well for yourself, because it wouldn't be cheap to start with. The seats and the facilities behind the scenes, the food and the drinks and everything in behind there is unbelievable, which is something we haven't had in Sydney for a long time now. Maybe back in 2000 when we had the Olympics, ANZ, probably what is now ANZ, probably felt a bit like that at the time, but maybe really wasn't at that level already. Certainly isn't now. Allianz is diabolical. I get into fights with people. People say, what's wrong with Allianz Stadium? And this might be covering old ground from some months ago on the show, but Allianz Stadium, it's a wet, dank, dark, soulless, cold, windy, awful joint and watch sport. It's a death trap, as they told us, the trust have told us. It's not up to spec as far as getting people out of there in a hurry should there be drama at the stadium. It's an awful place, and we should have much, much better. Now, don't get started about hospitals and education and schools, because there is all that money in the New South Wales government's budget
anyway
to look after that stuff anyway. But if we pretend to be a world-class city, we need something of the equivalent of Adelaide Oval. And the fact that you can walk across the river, the Torrens River, across the bridge, it's a three-minute walk from the centre of town to the stadium, just adds to the whole experience. We won't have that in Sydney, quite obviously. They missed a great chance to put it not putting a stadium at Darling Harbour.
Barangaroo.
Darling Harbour should have been a stadium for your life.
Yeah.
How good would it have been? But anyway, we just need to look and say that's the minimum. What they've built in Adelaide or Perth, or whatever, that's the minimum. We have to reach that mark. I hope it happens.
If using racing parlance, if Adelaide Oval and Optus Stadium in Perth were on the Flemington finish line in a photo finish, I don't think ANZ Stadium or Allianz Stadium in Sydney are even at the clock tower. They haven't even turned the corner onto the straight.
Allianz Stadium is just coming past Chiquita Lodge down the back straight of Flemington. They've still got 1,200 to run if those stadiums are at the finish line at Flemington.
Yeah.
Because that's how far behind Allianz is.
Yeah.
And I know,
and you know what?
I know you're not going to get 35,000 there to see the Roosters playing whomever, Newcastle or the Bulldogs, or on a wet Thursday night at you know 7:50. That's just not going to happen. Or when the Swans are next door getting 36,000, that's never going to change. Or maybe that will improve slightly if the experience of getting there and when you get inside is better, because there's no doubt the better the experience, the more people you are likely to get.
Spend billions on sports and you bring money into the state. You know, hospitals and schools only ever cost you money. You spend money, you invest and actually get it back over decades because people come, travel to watch the big sporting events. We've been here before.
We do need hospitals and schools.
Of course we do.
There's no doubt about that.
And there's budget and space for it.
And I'm a massive proponent for education in particular. Yes. I think we should do better with education, and maybe people have had a bad experience at hospital, they'll say yes.
But the excuse that no, we should spend that money on hospital and education is irrelevant because the money is already there.
Yeah.
And you've got to spend some money in areas where you're actually going to make some future money from.
Because you'll miss out on all the big events.
They'll go
to Adelaide, they'll go to Perth, they'll go to Melbourne, they'll go to Brisbane, they won't go to Sydney.
New South Wales Premier Warren Smith, welcome to the Legislative Assembly.
And it is, it is hard to get people in Sydney to go to things. It's not just sport.
No.
So it's you need the facilities to try and attract people to go to events in Sydney. Now is the chance to do that. Rant over. In regards to stadiums and the state of things on the political scene.
I'm glad you enjoyed Adelaide.
In New South Wales. I loved Adelaide. The game itself, back to the footy for a moment, only briefly though, it wasn't a great contest. And I sort of had a theory over the weekend that the rep round and having so many players involved in those, what are big games? Test matches, Origin, two teams flying with plenty of players involved from the NRL in Denver with the Poms and the Kiwis. I thought there was just a bit of a drop-off maybe in the standard for some of those players involved, and maybe Melbourne and the Roosters suffered a little bit from that. People have said there were too many penalties and they got whistle-happy over there in Adelaide. On a stage where we had the chance to spread the gospel of rugby league to the South Australians, the referees spoiled it by blowing too many penalties. I would counter that by saying there's a common denominator here, or probably two common denominators, the Roosters and the Storm. Both teams, as we know, the Roosters were pretty much the pin-up boys for giving away penalties on your own line going back a couple of seasons. When they would give away penalties, and maybe they sparked this, you know, this rash and this whole crackdown in 2018, they, for my mind, were certainly one of the first few teams to say, you know what, we'll give away the cynical penalty and just to make sure we've got our line set. It caught on like wildfire. I think if they weren't the epicentre of it, they weren't far from the epicentre of that, of that sort of style of thinking happening on your own line. And we know Melbourne, well, they'll happily give away a penalty, won't they? They're in the same boat. They'll be right there on their own line. If they're not ready, if they perceive we're a bit weak here, we haven't got numbers on the left-hand side, we'll hold down and give away a penalty to make sure we're set and back ourselves to defend that next set. So it's not a massive surprise. It's not a huge leap to say there will be a few penalties between the Roosters and the Storm, is it?
Well, Grant Atkins, the referee, I believe, at that game, is very conscious of, at the start of the season, they were told and they went at their job vigorously in terms of trying to get teams to behave themselves. And he has a phrase that escapes me at the moment for the sort of penalties they were blowing. He is very, very conscious of avoiding those sort of penalties if he can. So I don't believe for a moment he's out there looking to blow penalties. Having spoken with him, I've got no doubt that if he could not blow the whistle, he would not. He's not looking for a reason to blow the P, and I would, like you, suspect that the Roosters of Melbourne might have had a little bit to do with that high penalty count. Not the referee solely, trying to make a name for himself or prove that he's the bigger ego out there. He's not his makeup.
Yeah, 15 penalties in the first half. And I've got to say, you know, none of them surprised me. Melbourne, twice early in the game, ignored the chance to go for 2 points, and they backed themselves. Well, the Roosters' defence kept them out. Well, they're the best defence in the competition. They certainly were going into round six. They only gave up 9 points in the game. They'll remain the best defence in the league. And the Melbourne Storm, where are they ranked? Number two.
Yeah.
So it always had that potential. It was cold, wet and windy in Adelaide during the afternoon. It stopped for the game. It got a bit squally a couple of times during the game itself, but it always had that potential to be a low, dour affair, grinding And Cameron Smith, if anybody was going to kick the field goal to win it, after Cameron Munster had a couple of cracks at it, well, then Cam just said, give it to me. I can slot it. And from almost, 40 metres out, as calmly as you like. It was only the fourth field goal of his career, which I was stunned to realise when he kicked it. He's played almost, he's 372 games now, so best part of 400 games. He's basically kicked one field goal for almost every 100 games he's played, which is quite remarkable because I can think of, if he's kicked four in his career at the NRL, at least three of those have won games. I can think of one at Brookvale, I can think of one at Melbourne where he went bananas a couple of seasons ago. I think all four he's kicked might have won games.
Well, there's a good reason he's only had four field goals made. That's because Cooper Cronk's been doing it for him. And he has a great record in games in which Cooper Cronk kicks a field goal. He's nearly 100% at club level and origin level. Yep. So Cam hasn't had to shoot for one too often, but he had to the other day and he did it very, very well. I've had you as Premier of New South Wales. What if I made you a psychologist, Woz, and sent you down to Canberra for a couple of days?
I knew we were going to get here.
What do you think you might say to the men who wear lime green and wear lime green really well for about 60, 65 minutes? But by my calculations, I reckon it's about 10 times this season they've been level or ahead into the final 20 and been beaten. There's a real theme that you think, this is ridiculous, it can't happen again. But it continues to do so. Brisbane beat Canberra 26-22 after the Raiders looked home for all money when Josh Hodgson went over.
16-0 at halftime and then 22-12 at one stage of the second half when Hodgson scored. Yep. And off the back of the Broncos coming at them, scoring a couple of good tries early-ish in the second half to make it 16-12, when Hodgson scored, certainly wasn't game over, but you thought, it won't happen today. Yeah. Hodgson's back. He'll help get them around the park. And they've just got enough, though. And they played fantastic football in that first 40 minutes. There was all the talk and all the drama, of course, about Jack Whiten off the back of his pleading guilty to an assault charge in the days leading up to the game, stood down by the NRL, not the Raiders, which is intriguing in itself. And we'll hear and find out more about that, I guess, as the next week or so plays out. And he, again, fronts court Jack Whiten. But Brad Abbey coming in for him, I can't remember the last time I saw a player get a chance at a fill-in role like that and take it with both hands the way he did. Brad Abbey was astoundingly good in the first half. His kick returns were enormous. His play two, play three carries, got them on the front foot off the back of that. Kotrick would come in. They'd go 40 metres in two runs off the back of Abbey and Kotrick. And then you've got Shannon Boyd and Junior Paulo and Sia Soliola and others, Josh Papali, storming down the field at you. Mm. And they were, the Broncos couldn't compete. And I thought, they might do a number here on the Broncos and put on 40 points plus. What do you know? It was just the Raiders. The Faders, again, emerged from halftime. And Ricky Stewart, he was interviewed by Andy Raymond on our coverage in the tunnel, coming back out for the second half. And Andy said, what's the message? He said, the message is simple. We played a great 40 minutes, but we have to play another great 40. We can't play 35 because we've played 35 in the second half in the past and lost the game a bunch of times this year. We have to play 40 minutes. Well, poor old Ricky sits there on the sideline watching another horror show unfold before him because they didn't go close to playing 40. And it's one thing to make mistakes in games and you can blame the handling, but you've got to have the resolve to be able to defend those mistakes. And they just don't look like, when they make a mistake, they lose their minds, and Blake Austin continues to be a weak link in the defensive line. And you didn't have to be Nostradamus. And I said during the call, quite obviously here, they will try and target Blake Austin because teams have had so many results going to that right-hand side of the Raiders' defence. And Austin and Leilua in particular, when Whitehead's inside Austin, they just don't seem to be on the same page at times. And Austin will turn in, chase a decoy runner, leave a gap. That's how they scored one try. The next time around, it's Milford. He goes at the line. Austin's got eyes on the outside, leaves a gap back on the inside shoulder. Milford goes straight through and scores that try. It's game on again, and the Broncos get the job done. I don't know what, as a psychologist, I don't know what you would say to Canberra that hasn't already been said. Mm. And at some point, you just have to say, we don't have the players who are winners who can win at this level consistently. certainly can't win when it gets to September, but let alone make September. And now at 6-9, they're 6 points outside the top eight, three clear wins. Now with only 9 games remaining for them in the Premiership, they're any old price. Think of a number and triple it, and then multiply it by your grandmother's age. That's the odds they should be to make the top eight, because they're up against it. And they're up against it because we keep mentioning their run home, Matty.
Yeah.
Their last seven games. They've got the Bulldogs next, then they've got the Cowboys. Then they play the Sharks, the Storm, the Panthers. They play the Tigers in round 22. They finish with the Roosters, the Rabbitohs and the Warriors on the road. How's that run looking? No chance. Tough. They're done. They're gone.
I spoke to Jared Croker about this complaint at the Raiders in terms of fading late, and he was quite happy to talk about it. And I think what he said was really good. He said it's become such an issue that when we find ourselves in the final 20, game on the line, we actually think, righto, let's really defend here. Let's make sure we get it right. Let's, basically they start thinking about it. He said, I want to go the other way and say, let's keep doing what we've done for the first 60. Let's not worry about this factor. Let's not worry about our defence. Let's not think, how are we going to fix the problem that's come to haunt us in the past? Let's just continue to play like we have, like we can. And so it's all very well to say it, Jared, but I suppose now the team has to actually do it. And back to Brad Abbey, he was a boom fullback at
The Warriors,
yeah, and got lots of rats. Went to the Dogs, didn't get the chances that perhaps he was after. So I was really happy to see him deliver that performance for the Raiders on the weekend, and we might see more of it. But, yeah, the six-point gap now was between the top eight, the bottom eight. We don't see that top eight changing in terms of who's in there. Maybe the order will, of course. But what does that mean for the next 9 weeks of the Premiership? I can't remember a season where it's been so clear-cut so early in the season. In fact, only a few years ago, was it 2010 or thereabouts, it came down to the final round where you had eight teams jostling for a couple of positions on the edge of the top eight. We're not going to get anywhere near that, you wouldn't imagine, this year. So this weekend, for example, Dogs, Raiders, Belmore, are we going to have those sort of games, often three or four of them maybe, in the run to the finals, where there is absolutely no finals relevance on it, which makes our job as commentators a bit tougher in terms of how are we going to breathe some real life and intrigue and excitement into this. We want people to watch this game. We know that Raiders fans and Dogs fans will be tuning in, but if you're cheering for South Sydney or for St George Illawarra, why do you want to buy into Dogs Raiders this weekend?
Yeah, it's tough, and you know, if Saturday night for mine felt like a grand final for the Raiders because they were playing the team they would most likely, if they were to push their way into the top eight, they were playing the team that they would most likely force out of the
top
eight. That's why it was a four-point game. If they win the game, they're 2 points back. If they lose the game, they're 6 points back. That's the predicament they find themselves in now. So, you know, if that was a grand final, I don't know what this is. This is the Super Bowl against the Bulldogs on Saturday night out there at Belmore Sports Ground. That might be a tough sell for the Dogs fans, although they were very good against the Knights. They probably got a couple of extra thousand people through the gate off the back of that performance against the Newcastle Knights up there on Saturday night in Newcastle. And I was happy for the Bulldogs because they're a club at a low ebb and will remain at a low ebb for a bunch of seasons. And it's just, it's almost criminal what has happened at Belmore. If you were trying to sabotage a club, you couldn't do a better job than what actually happened over the past couple of years at Belmore. If your sole reason for being involved in a football team was to see that team struggle for a half a decade plus off the back of your tenure there, what happened couldn't have done a better job of achieving that. It's unbelievable to think that all the drama was allowed to happen and will have an effect for so many years to come. It's just ridiculous that Aaron Woods could be a key signing in the off-season and barely halfway past his first season at the club, he's now playing for somebody else. I mean, that's indictable.
And to make matters worse, you got your CEO, your chairman, your head coach. The head coach left the club and got a large payout for letting this situation unfold. The CEO is now head of Australian rugby. The chairman, well, he's gone on to other things. So that
he's on the board of the New South Wales Rugby League.
There you go. So they've all gone on to what would be described as favourable positions with absolutely no care or concern for the poor people left supporting Canterbury. You know, how is that allowed to happen? Back-ended contracts is like borrowing to go on holidays. Very simplistic, I know. In some situations, it probably needs to be done. But when it's done with multiple players and it leaves the current players and current coach, current board, etc., in this situation, if they were in charge of an Australian Stock Exchange listed company, those people who presided over Canterbury, they'd be in front of some commission and paying some sort of price for it. But in the world of rugby league, the world turns, they move on, and I hope all is not forgotten. I hope all is not forgotten. And there's I'm waiting to see an Australian rugby media conference where someone types up at the back, excuse me, Raylene, could I just ask a couple of questions regarding the Canterbury Bulldogs? And goes hard.
Yeah. Well, and she, in her mind, she has addressed those questions in the past in regarding the Bulldogs, and she has moved on. She would say, I've covered that off in the past. Yeah. I'm not talking about it. That's, I guarantee you that's exactly what she would
say. And you asked me earlier on in this podcast season, will Des Hasler ever coach?
He will never coach again.
At NRL level
He will never ever coach again at the NRL level.
I said at the time, desperate clubs do desperate things. And I wondered whether Des could sell himself to a club who needed an experienced coach who would no doubt sell a good job application. Having watched the story unfold, I'm convinced he's done.
Completely and utterly done. Yep. Will never, ever get the chance to implode a club as he did at Manly and then play his part in both Manly and the Bulldogs completely imploding off the back of it.
Now that their excuses will be that the NRL couldn't give us a clear enough indication about the salary cap. But the bottom line is, if we're running household budgets, we don't go and spend now with the prospect of Fox Sports giving us a big pay rise in 12 or 18 months, because we're idiots if we do, right?
Yeah.
So why did they?
If you sign Kieran Foran for $1 million plus, given his history, his physical history, and the Warriors were paying him maybe a third of that, because he had to get something somewhere to move on from what happened at Parramatta, and he had to get a chance to get his life back in order and get himself back on the football park. But the reality is, Kieran is a shell physically of the player he was when he won a premiership with the Seagulls. And people keep tumbling into players who are way past their best, like Kieran Foran, like Jarryd Hayne, keep tumbling into them, thinking 2009 will re-emerge and Jarryd will be the player he once was. Kieran can get it together and turn the clock back. It's not going to happen. I'll be stunned. I hope it does happen for him, because I'd like to see the bloke get himself completely sorted out and play the football he can play. That would be a fantastic thing. But you can't risk the future of your club by taking that chance in trying to be, it's almost like the Salvation Army. Come to us. Give us your tired, your poor.
Yeah.
You're unhealthy. We'll take them all and try and help them out at some point.
And pay them big. And pay them bigger in years to come.
Pay them massive overs. At some point, you have to say the club comes first. It's not about me. It's not about helping somebody out. The club has to come first. And that wasn't the case in this situation.
And the reason we're so passionate about it isn't because we're Dogs fans. It's because we are fans of the Dogs fans. I feel for them, you know. Seeing them on Saturday night in Newcastle, talking to some of them, they know they've got a long trek ahead. And I'm really happy that they beat Newcastle and found some joy in what is a tough time to be a Dogs fan. So, yeah, that's why I'm passionate about it, for the fans.
Now that we've spoken about the Bulldogs and the Raiders, let's move ahead to round 17 and give me a tip for that game. What do you think?
Dogs, Raiders, I think that wins like the Dogs had against Newcastle will be few and far between because of the struggles they are having. And the Raiders, surely this week they will win. They won't get a lot of players back, but they should beat the Dogs on form. If they can push Brisbane at Suncorp, surely they should go to Belmore and beat Canterbury.
You'd think it's an origin-affected game.
Yeah.
David Clemmer won't be there for the Bulldogs. Josh Papali won't be there for the Raiders. So maybe those two cancel each other out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that, like you, the Raiders, surely, with their season literally on the line this week, if they can't beat the Bulldogs, then it, I think it's already over, but it's completely over. albeit mathematically.
And the storyline of the Dogs I'm looking forward to seeing a youngster come along who wouldn't have got the opportunity, bar the situation they are in, take it with both hands and go on to have a 10 to 15 year NRL career and look back and say, well, if it wasn't for that drama, I wouldn't have got the start that I've got. I'm looking forward to that sort of storyline unfolding.
Yep. Okay, what about Thursday night? Massive game, this one. It's such a shame that it's Origin affected the Storm and the Dragons down there at Amy Park in Melbourne. Now, people were saying, and storylines happened during the course of the week, people were cotton onto the fact that this off the back of Origin. Origin will dominate the next 24 hours or so, and then at some point on Wednesday, people will realise, oh, there's some games being played this weekend. Oh, Storm playing Dragons. Oh, what a shame that's being played this week, because it would have been nice to see them at full tilt as opposed to missing players due to Origin. It just happens that way. I guess you know, you can't solve every scheduling issue, and people would say, well, obviously the Dragons and the Storm is going to be a blockbuster. Well, you know, did you really know that? Did you know the Dragons are going to have as many rep players as they've had this season before the season kicked off going into round 17 against Melbourne?
No, you didn't.
You couldn't predict that.
Funnily enough, I think the Storm and Dragons have met often in recent years during the Origin period.
Yeah.
I remember a couple of games in the Gong where they've been missing players left, right and centre. This time it just happens to be in Melbourne. You can't predict it, and it is sad, but it is what it is, was. And while the Dragons have a number of Origin players missing, so too the Storm. They do have Cam Smith, who won the game for Melbourne in Adelaide, and I reckon he'll win the game for Melbourne at Amy Park.
Yeah, I think so. With the Dragons missing, obviously, some key players right there, I think it might be tough. Melbourne lose a few players themselves, quite obviously, but I think they're probably better placed, and with Cameron, as long as Cameron Smith is on two legs and on the field, then I'm tipping them against pretty much most teams. Friday night, Panthers versus the Warriors. Again, in an Origin week, this is a big game, isn't it?
It is. Panthers, Warriors, it's a big game for Penrith, who dropped two in a row, who cannot shake that storyline about the coach not quite being the right man for the job. I hate that storyline. I think that the Penrith Panthers are a top four team at the moment. I've spent some time with Anthony Griffin and thoroughly enjoyed his company. I just hate reading about that sort of story while the team is playing good footy. They've got a good team. I don't know what it is in me, but I don't want to immerse myself in that. I just want to watch Penrith and Warriors go at it. Penrith get back to their best form, albeit without Cleary and Maloney and others, if they're in fact others there. I'm just trying to rack my brain quickly. It'll be a game that the Warriors should win after the way they were beaten by Cronulla. But, you know, at Penrith, yeah, I'd lean towards the Warriors.
I'm a bit on the Panthers. It was the case when Ivan Cleary was there that I thought Ivan was, you know, moved on a bit quick.
Definitely.
And very unlucky, because they had injuries. They had injuries throughout his tenure there and never quite got the chance to, you know, he didn't get the chance to sort of see the process out.
He was tired, apparently.
Apparently he was tired. But, you know, moved on. Maybe he's tired again now at the Tigers.
No.
Maybe the bus has got four flat tyres.
Yeah.
Who knows with the Tigers. But anyway, the Panthers have had a horror run with injuries again this year. It hasn't done them any favours. And there's a reason why the Dragons are flying and the Rabbitohs are flying, because they've had very few. The Dragons have had no injuries.
Mm.
The Rabbitohs have had very few injuries. There's a reason why those teams are in the top couple of positions on the ladder, because they've had a good run. They've got a good coach. They've got a good system in place. But they've had the same team week in, week out, being able to turn up and play. They know the combinations. They know each other so well. The Panthers have just had injury after injury. Every week, it's somebody. Viliami Kikau.
Yeah.
Goes down on the weekend. It's just one, every game there is a key injury to a Penrith Panther, it seems, and they're continually in this process of getting players back, losing players, never quite having their top 13 on the field. So, you know, give Anthony Griffin the rest of the season and next season to see what he can do. You're not going to sack him, are you? I mean, what's the story? They're not going to sack him, are they?
No, I don't.
Surely not. So
no.
His
team's
going
in the top four was they've had any number of injury excuses.
Because
he's brought through Nathan Cleary. Jimmy Maloney is playing fantastically for him. They're not going to. If they sack him, then that's absolutely.
Do you know, if the Panthers do sack Anthony Griffin, and it can't happen this year, surely, but if they sack Anthony Griffin, the only person who can be the next coach of the Penrith Panthers is who?
Phil Gould.
Yes.
Philip Ronald Gould.
Let's stop it. If Ivan Cleary wasn't good enough, if Anthony Griffin wasn't good enough, and who's out there
Well, the rumours are that
who's out there
Cameron Ciraldo is a fantastic coach, and he may well be. He was a rock-solid player. He's had lots of lower-grade success.
But how many seasons would Cameron Ciraldo honestly get?
Exactly.
Would he get two, and then if they didn't produce under Cameron Ciraldo, he'd be shipped off as well?
Well, there you go.
If Anthony Griffin isn't the long-term or the medium-term coach for the next couple of seasons at the Penrith Panthers, the only person who can be the next coach at Penrith is the general manager of football.
And further to that was, only a couple of weeks ago in this podcast, you asked me who might win the comp, and I picked Penrith, I think. I said I love the squad, the way they're rolling. They could still win the comp, and yet we're also having a discussion about moving the coach on. Help me make sense of that.
No,
but this game, Penrith against the Warriors, you got fourth against fifth, so two top four wannabes, both beaten last weekend. That's a huge game. It might be origin affected, it might be an abbreviated round, but I reckon that's intriguing. That's a huge game for both clubs.
Yeah, I've got the Warriors winning that one. Just the fact that Cleary and Maloney won't be there, yeah, makes it really tough on Penrith, and the Warriors are a good team, and they are a big factor in this competition. I didn't mention them earlier on, the chances to win the comp, but quite obviously, they are a big chance to win the premiership this season. And, it's not a massive leap to say that they will beat Penrith, given what's happened with Origin.
Especially if
this
Roger Tuivasa-Sheck keeps tackling. Like, he has had an outstanding... From round one, when he pulled off that amazing try-saver on Alex Johnston, if memory serves me, he has backed it up every fortnight or so with a tackle that rivals that one. His defensive year as a fullback has been one of the best I can remember.
The final game in round 17 on Sunday at Seabus Super Stadium, the Titans at home against the Broncos. The Titans looking to make it three on the trot.
Yeah.
Ash Taylor against Wayne Bennett, and the Broncos gets a chance to prove a point, perhaps.
And they beat the Broncos at Suncorp earlier this season. Now, they'll be without Jai Arrow, who was fantastic for them at Leichhardt yesterday. Jared Wallace has been dropped to the Queensland bench, but he's still in Origin, and he really, I thought, improved yesterday from his Origin performance. He was out with a point to prove. So they miss a couple of key forwards, the Titans, but, of course, the Broncos, hard hit as well. So, you know, this will be a beauty, a South Queensland derby to finish the round at Robina, and the Titans back-to-back wins now for them. Wouldn't they love to go back-to-back against Brisbane from a season perspective?
I think they can. I think with the players will be missing for the Broncos, Josh Maguire in particular.
Yeah.
He's a big loss for Brisbane. I think the Titans can win this game.
And the Keegan Hipgrave... persona continues to spread. Blocker Roach yesterday said to me afterwards, "How good's Keegan Hipgrave? I love watching him." Brett Camorley was likening Keegan Hipgrave to Greg Bird and similarly saying, "Geez, I like the look of this bloke." You know, given their first real good look at him.
Yep.
And I said, "Oh, I've been noting that for a while. I call him Mr. Helter Skelter."
That's right.
You know, he's full on, but we love that. And the parallel to Greg Bird, I thought, was a reasonable one, you know.
On field, off field, hopefully.
On field, you know, all or nothing. And,
sure.
You know, no fear or favour. I spend a few weeks out suspended, so be it.
And that's the price I pay.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's good to see that the rugby league world is catching on to Keegan.
He might be a bulldog.
Who knows?
Yeah, there's plenty of talk about the Bulldogs looking at Keegan Hipgrave very seriously to try and bolster their stocks as they retool this time of flux over there at Belmore HQ. Interesting show.
We got through plenty, was. Again.
An hour of footy chat.
I love it.
A couple of rants.
What would it be without a rant, was? It'd be boring if we weren't ranting. We'd have no fodder for the good folk on Twitter to digest and get back to us.
There's a lot to talk about. There'll be a lot to talk about when we reconvene in the You Can Take Me Now, I Have Seen It All studios next Monday. Bye-bye.